accession number 26864, reel 10.
Arthur Caney, end of reel 9. Arthur Caney, reel 10. So how long were you at Capua?
Oh, quite a time. We were about 6 weeks while we had reinforcements, rested, had new equipment. And then we had to go to... we're home now, which is June, May, June, July, August. And then we had to go, we had orders to move to Palestine. We had to go to Toronto and back to Palestine for training.
Right, which part of Palestine did you go to?
Well, we went to a place, Nathania was one place, Damascus, of course, around that area, but as well as Nathania, Damascus, Haifa.
And what sort of training were you doing?
Well, first of all, we received a lot of reinforcements from the artillery. The artillery had been changed from artillery to infantry. So we received three or four hundred to make up the strength.
Yeah. And how well trained were they as infantry?
Well, they absorbed straight away. They were NCOs mostly, and it was quite easy. And General Platt, he used to be our company, our commander in Aldershot in 1932, he came to see us there, and that we found that were 50 men, I was one of them, who had been there in 1932 in the battalion, 1932. George Woolnor, he was another one. General Platt, yes, he was a wonderful man.
What did he look like? Did he inspire?
Well, he was a very shortish chap, really, General Platt. He went to Eritrea. You'll probably know the story about his battles.
What was he like to you? What was he like to work with?
Well, he was very sport-minded. And wherever he was later on, before the war started, wherever we won something, we would always get a telegram. He'd be watching what was happening to his regiment. There was a good feeling.
And he was with you in Palestine?
No, he just visited. As a general, he came to see us.
So, what sort of training did you do in Palestine then?
Well, we did assault training. All training, normal infantry training.
And did you get up to a good standard,
Yes, well, we were always up to a good standard in peace and war.
But I suppose it takes time for reinforcements to be sort of really absorbed and amalgamated and all become one body.
Yes, if you didn't have too many reinforcements, the more you had, the more difficult. But they were coming from an artillery unit, so their discipline was good. They were not like raw recruits.
So how long did all this training in Palestine take?
We're talking about 44 now. We're back in now, 44. June 44, July, August, September 44. Now, General Montgomery had promised our division that we would return to Europe, because we were in Dunkirk, we would return to Europe. So therefore, we thought we would be then training, but unfortunately we were sent back to Italy again. We were there for 2 months.
Whereabouts in Italy?
Around Taranto. Well, that was the main place where we landed. And then we finished up in Naples, and we were then put on a boat, American ship, to go to the south of France, where we knew then we were off to join the Northwest Europe.
So you went to the south of France. Which port did you go to?
No, when did we get to? Right down the south then. Marseille must have been Marseille. The point is, we went straight off the boat, straight onto a train, 40 horses, 20 men. Oh dear, oh dear. Open trucks, straw. We were there for 3 days. Travelled right up through to Belgium, a place called Lokeren.
Sorry, place called?
Lokeren, L-O-K-E-R-E-N, Lokeren.
Thank you. So what sort of a place was that?
Well, that was a very nice place. We could have stayed there a few years. It was a place, we were there a few weeks.
And what was going on when you...
Well, we were still doing all the lot of training. And then we were absorbing a few more recruits. And we were getting a lot of extra training. They were... You were taken into a cinema once, the warrant officers and officers, and we were shown certain inventions which they'd had, which you hear about a lot now, but you didn't then. Infrared. We had infrared sights. All sorts of things which were handy, where you could put a disc on a tree, on trees in a wood. You could make your route through the wood, and you could go at speed with an infrared pair of binoculars on the vehicle you're driving. There was a pair of binoculars which would hang on a harness above your head, so that you could go at speed with the infrared on the discs. You could go through. But we were told then that we couldn't use them because they'd be captured and the enemy would have the same. So 5 years later, we had it in the British Army, properly. But it makes you laugh the way... We had them on sites as well. Wonderful things now. We had them now in many years. But there was 5 years we were not allowed to use them because... didn't want the enemy to get the same.
Did you think, I mean, when you were shown this film, did it seem incredible or unlikely? Or?
Oh, no, saying, no, it's not the film, this was physical. We had it physically.
Right, well, they
showed
you.
We had the item, we had them to use.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, no, I meant the cinema, but it's a place where you could sit, you know, and you could have areas to put the stuff on show. They had the vehicles there with the discs in front of each lamp. Well, you've got it all today, they've got everything now the same. But it was all interesting. Mm. Those were the time of the V-bombs were off, coming off then, round about in Belgium. You could see them going off to the UK.
So what sort of date was this? I mean, was there still fighting in Belgium, or was Belgium...
No, we were ready to go forward.
Right.
We moved forward then. We're talking about 1944, beginning 45 now. We're getting to, yes, and I'm looking back now. It's getting towards the end of the war now.
So did you see action in Europe?
Yes, we saw quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Not serious stuff.
Yeah. Where was your first action then?
Well, the Elbe was the place, really. Mm-hmm. We got to the Elbe, and the Russians were there at the same time. And then we heard all about Belsen. One of our TA battalions, well, two of our TA battalions, had released, had gone to Belsen at the time. So we met up with them. We had weekends together, two weekends. We joined them and they joined us. So we had all the news, really, from their battles. And about Belsen, of course.
Had you heard of concentration camps before?
No. No, and they showed us photographs. We had photographs then of all the, oh, shocks, of the big sheds full of glasses, we'll say. Reading glasses. I've seen photographs of them, and you cannot believe that it's possible to have that number of glass in one camp. And I had some photographs which seem disappeared over the years.
And what did the officers or NCOs of the TA battalion, what did they tell you? How How did they phrase it?
Well, they had to go and clear it. They had to get the local people. They were ordered, I suppose Montgomery must have ordered them, to collect the local people to take them to see what was happening. And then they formed deep displaced persons camps from the refugees. And there were many Poles and others, and a lot of them came back to England in the end. But there were long, long time, even after the war finished, when we had DP camps around in Germany.
What did it make you think about the Germans when you heard about the about Belsen?
Well, you see, we've fought with the German army, and to us it was straightforward. I mean, we treated each other properly. But of course, we didn't deal with the SS side. Our unit was fortunate, I suppose, not to... Because when the war finished, there was a few days when we were in a place called... on the Elbe. And we were in a town, and we were ordered, we were told that we'd been leaving at 9 o'clock at night, but we couldn't tell the local people because the Russians were going to come in as we moved out. They'd handed over the land. And that was a bit tricky because we knew the people. We were got on very well with the local people. We'd only been there 3 or 4 days, but we moved out at 9 o'clock, and I never forget walking round at 7 o'clock around the camp, around the town, and everybody was carrying out their normal work. And we felt a bit ashamed that we had to leave them. But there we are, those were the rules, the orders.
Did you feel that they wouldn't be safe in the hands of the Russians?
Well, we knew they wouldn't be, didn't we? We heard the stories afterwards. What happened that we found later, they just... You see, depends on the type of the Russian. I mean, some of them are right from the wilds of Mongolia. And those units were a bit crude. And they would stop at the end of the street and use all the buildings, whatever they were, people in there or not, they would then go and live in the... with the in the same house, or kick them all out.
There must be a huge amount of sort of poverty and hunger and misery about in those days in Germany.
Well, I don't know. After we talked, the war's finished now. You see, the war finished. We were in near the Elbe. Lübeck was the day when the peace was signed.
Right. You were in Lübeck.
Lübeck, yes. Yeah. Wonderful town.
Yeah.
Well, we saw some wonderful towns here. Yeah. Those were not smashed.
You had some fighting at the Elbe, though, did you?
Yes.
Yes. Can you tell me about that?
Well, a lot of shelling and advanced. But it was pretty easy going because the Germans were ready to give up. I mean, I've been at night on a motorbike for miles and miles and miles on a road, and the road was no one on the road, but all on the curbs, all the German prisoners all giving themselves up, thousands and thousands and thousands. You go on for, I cannot believe the numbers that were just passing, but they were so well disciplined, as the Germans are, that there was no problem. The road was kept open for us, and they were on the side.
Extraordinary, really.
It was. I mean, you'd have thought there'd been. There was no. It was all disciplined.
You sound as though you've got quite a respect for the ordinary German soldier.
Yes, because we were there. We would call out to each other, and we would. I captured a few, yes. I remember I was on a motorbike once, and I was driving around to see what was going on, and a young lad called me on a farm And I went back to the farm, and there were two Luftwaffe. I don't know if they were pilots or what they were, but Luftwaffe. And they wanted to give themselves up. So I was able to collect their pistols and their details and send them back down the road. I captured quite a few. Then I, on another time on a motorbike, I went to release them. Not a camp, not a prisoner of war camp. It was for civilians. And, you know, I went thinking back. Even the guards there, they were all fat. Even the people in this concentration camp, they're all well fed. This was in the country. But what they were, I didn't stay long enough to find out what they were, but they must have been, I don't know, not concentration, just ordinary, what do they call it when you have civilians in a camp?
Displaced, yes.
Earlier. Mm. But it struck me that they were far better fed than we were.
So, I mean, you saw fighting at the Elbe. Where else was it with many other...
Well, I've got the name in my... I can visualise it now, what the last village we were in. It was blown up. I'm not quite sure. Mm. I just visualised it now.
What sort of a place was it? What sort of buildings?
Well, they were all smashed. They were all smashed up. The artillery and anti-tank shells. It was... There was all the... There were no refugees about there.
No civilians?
No.
Yeah. Did you feel any sort of pangs of guilt or anything about the amount of damage that we'd done to the German homeland?
Well, not really, because I knew what had been going on at home. I mean, I'd been in Liverpool, digging them out in Birkenhead in the early days. I'd seen it all in our own country. Oh, no.
So, you heard that the peace was signed when you were at Lübeck, right?
That's right.
What was your first feeling when you heard?
Well, I remember writing it down. The war for us is over. Yes, I remember putting that down in my little book.
What was your feeling?
Well, we'd had a good run. We'd been all around the world, and we were the Globetrotters. Oh, I forgot to tell you, they gave us a name. When we were in Rome, just when Sergeant Rogers won his... earned his VC. D-Day, that was the 3rd of June. We were in a camp then, on the 6th of June was D-Day. So somebody produced a song called We Are the D-Day Dodgers, way out in Italy. That was a good one. We went on for years, that one. Were you proud of that, we were?
Yeah. So, Lübeck, did you expect things to change suddenly now that the war was over? Or did you expect you'd all be sent home?
Well, we knew they had to thin down a bit the reservists, and those who were called up were due to go home. So we were stationed in a wonderful place called Einbeck for peace. And there, we're doing our normal training and everything else, and occupation duties, and then I was promoted again then, RQMS, Regimental Quartermaster Sergeant. I went on a course locally for about 10 days, but I'd been doing a similar job before as a colour sergeant.
Sorts of things
today? Well, it was accounting stores and rations. Oh, that was a thing, yeah. Once I took the job on, the wives joined us in September 1946.
In You were still in the Lübeck area, were you?
No, we moved from Lübeck to Hanover. Okay. A wonderful place. We moved into a military barracks. So life became much easier. Unfortunately, my job then, we had to go into peacetime accounting, from wartime to peacetime accounting. And unfortunately, we were losing our trained soldiers and we were getting reinforcements. And it was grim because they were for the accounting thing. But fortunately, we had German staff. And of course, they were well trained, so we at least could get the rations working properly. We had 72 families, of which they had to be fed. But unfortunately, we had to do accounting. Each family, there was husband, wife, and children, maybe of different age groups, 0 to 1, 1 to 2, all sorts of age groups. And they all had different ration scales. So not only did the staff, our army staff, with the Germans, have to produce the rations for each family, with the different amounts for each family, but they were charged. We had to raise bills for them. And what was complicated was each ration scale, each family age, was a different price. It was a shock. I just imagine 72 families. And not to withdraw the rations every 2 days, it would be issued out to them, cut up, trying to get the exact amounts for them, but to get the bills as well. And if we hadn't had a German officer there helping out our staff, it would have been impossible. Because it wasn't straightforward. It wasn't like every family was 3 and 6. It was every family would be odd amounts. As well as the food going out to them. It was a bit too much.
Life was felt quite settled then. I mean, Hanover was a beautiful city, but it'd been heavily bombed, hadn't it?
Yes, but I learned to ride there. We captured some horses, a lot of horses, so we were allowed to keep 6 for recreation. So we were taught to, we could learn to ride if we wanted. So I went to learn. I was taught by a German, ex-German sergeant major. We paid so much in the kitty for all this. And they taught us the German trot, where you bump the saddle as you go along. Well, after some time, we got reasonable at it. But unfortunately, three of us went out in a thunderstorm. And I'll never forget. The storm came, and the rains became wet, and the horses bolted. Now, I was hanging onto mine. We were going as fast as they could go, through the town, through the tram lines, oh dear, skidding everywhere. And the only thing that stopped us was the gate at the far end. Fortunately, we didn't go over the top. But it's not the thing I would sort of like to do again.
Your wife, did she enjoy being out in
Germany? Oh, yes, she enjoyed. I used to do, I had to do all the quarters. I had to do all the accounting for the quarters and things. It was a job. Because we had to take over civilian quarters, and everything in there had to be listed and signed for and maintained. And I had a very nice quarter. Yes, we were.
What sort of a building were you in?
Was it an apartment? No, we had buildings. Well, we selected our own buildings. We looked after them, maintained them, of course, up to the standard.
So, if you selected one, what happened to the people who were living in it? You moved them out, didn't
Well,
you?
They had, sometimes they stayed and wanted to come back in the cellar or something, but there were places made available for them in the town.
Right.
But fortunately, we didn't do the selecting ourselves. They had a billeting group who fortunately did it, made it easier for us.
What was the social life like there for you and your wife?
Oh, very good. We had our own messes. I was a senior, one us of them. The second senior in the unit, the Archimess was. And, oh, we had our mess dues, dances, and, oh, it was a pretty high standard. And we could go on leave to various places. Oh, yes, we went to Monazay. We had leave centres opened up all over Germany. Very high standard.
Yeah. What was the attitude of the German civilian population to you? I mean, they were beaten, they were defeated, and all the rest, and occupied.
Yeah, no, but the areas we were, they were, they took it in good, we always, well, don't forget we were employing them as well. As in, I mean, we in civilian staff, we must have had about 120 in the unit at various jobs. And we were living in there, in the areas with them. No, it was a very good. My wife got a bit annoyed. She found that after about 6 months she could go out and buy chocolate in Germany, which we couldn't get even in the Nafi, and also at home. So in the end, because of my job, she couldn't do it, but some people could barter coffee for other things, but our unit was such that against the rules.
And I suppose you had to set an example, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, no, we could, of course. And my wife didn't. I found out in the end, when I got back, I found she'd already, well, she'd done something, changed something.
She'd been bartering for chocolate, had she?
Coffee for something, I know. Coffee.
So how long did you stay in Germany after the war?
Oh, I had a very good time in Germany. I think, I did a lot of leaves. I stayed there to 1950.
Good long time.
Yes, but unfortunately around about 1948 we amalgamated our unit, which was the 2nd Battalion, amalgamated with the 1st Battalion. Because we both had lost so many, you know, during the war, and everyone knew we were going to amalgamate it. When it finished, it's rather unfortunate. At one stage, I was the senior one of our old unit. So I'd been with my regiment from 1932, 34 actually, the regular battalion. And I was in a unit which was then known as the 1st Battalion of the Worcestershire Regiment. And I was really a stranger in my own unit. It was not very good at all. And it wasn't any good because we couldn't get the same standard. We didn't get the same standard.
What was that standard of behaviour, turnout, abilities?
Well, turnout was all right, but there were not the same reliance on people doing the job. It was, no.
So you sound quite unsettled by this.
I was. Well, I was very unfortunate. I had a wonderful quartermaster when I took over, a major. As a matter of fact, he knew my uncle in the army in 1418. He didn't know my father, he was in the same unit. But he was an old soldier. And he taught me all I knew in my job. And I was doing the quartermaster job for 6 weeks at a time, when he was also off doing, helping the accountants check other battalions. So I really carried out the duties of quartermaster of that unit before we were amalgamated, quite a few times.
And what duties were stopped just there? Arthur Caney, end of Reel 10.